Hello, neighbors.
Hey, everyone.
Welcome back to another episode of Murder Next Door.
And today we have an announcement for everyone listening. Today's episode is going to be Kasha's last episode. So we are going to be taking a little bit of a hiatus, and then it'll be just little old me coming back to you. So excited for Kasha's next adventure, and I'm super excited to continue this podcast and come back with a bang. So keep an eye out for that. Things are going to be changing just a little bit. But yeah, well, I hope you stick around. Today's case is a bit of a long one, starting in our neighboring state, New Jersey, with some victims being harmed as close to us as Easton and Allentown, PA.
This case is a long road with an insane body count of over 40 people and has been covered by mass media everywhere. If you guys aren't familiar, the man we're going to be talking about today even went viral on TikTok for how high his body count was. We're going to be talking about Charles Cullen, a nurse who murdered dozens during his 16-year career. So without further ado, let's get bloody.
I was going to say, you want to press your little thing one final time?
Are you going to add it in?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
It's our new intro.
Yeah. That's how I come back, is just that.
Yeah, right? Like the beginning of the episode. Yeah. Just that's the music.
Perfect. Our case starts with the usual biography, so we can get to know our soon-to-be murderer, Charles Cullen, a little better. Born on February 22, 1960, in West Orange, New Jersey, Cullen's parents, Edmund and Florence, were the usual working middle-class Catholics of that time period. Charles Cullen was the youngest of eight children that those two had before Edmund's untimely death when Cullen was only 7 months old in September of 1960. Florence, his mother, was originally from England, but was emigrated to the U.S. during World War II because she was a war bride, which just meant she married military personnel and got to come to the U.S. because of it, essentially. Cullen loved his mom very much, and she was one of the only reprieves from what he would describe as a devastating childhood. He was consistently bullied by fellow schoolmates and most of his older sister's boyfriends, leading him to attempt suicide at the very young age of 9 years old.
Wow, that is very young.
Mm-hmm.
If he hadn't become who he did, I would feel a little more bad for him. The hardships wouldn't stop for Cullen anytime soon. In December of 1977, when Cullen was a senior in high school, his mother died due to injuries from a fatal car crash. He was absolutely devastated when he found out, but even worse was the way he found out. Reports say that Cullen wasn't even told of his mother's death right away, and that they cremated her body without the family's permission instead of returning it back to them.
Which is just terrible. But for those who might not know, being the Catholics that they were, this was even worse for Cullen's family, as they'd grown up being taught that cremation was a big no-no for Catholics, as they believed it would stop the body from its resurrection. Granted, the Catholic Vatican lifted that ban shortly after Cullen was born, it still was a very unpopular and frowned upon practice with older Catholics.
But back to our 17-year-old Cullen. As distraught as he was, he moved forward in his life. He graduated the following year in 1978 and enlisted in the U.S. Navy. Oddly enough, he passed his basic training and all his psychological exams with flying colors, so he was stationed on the USS Woodrow Wilson, which was a ballistic missile submarine. With his marks, he rose to petty officer quite quickly and became a crucial part of the team who operated the missiles on the sub. However, his bad social luck continued, and he was constantly being bullied and even hazed by his crewmates. And maybe the stress started to get to him, because at one point during his service on the USS Wilson, he was found in a full surgical getup, you know, like scrubs, masks, gloves, etc., just sitting at the missile control center instead of in his uniform. Concerned about the pressure he was under, he was reassigned by his head officers to the USS Canopus with a lower pressure job, where he helped store and repair missiles instead of operating them.
Cullen, however, did not take this reassignment well and attempted suicide a second time while on the USS Canopus, causing him to be admitted to the Navy's psych ward, where he became a frequent flyer in and out of the facility for a few years before ultimately being discharged from the Navy in 1984 for undisclosed reasons.
Yeah, undisclosed. Not like this guy had some issues with mental health or anything.
No, what are you talking about? He's perfectly sound. Passed all of his psychological exams, remember?
Which is why we're talking about him today.
Oh, yeah. Despite his misfortune socially, Cullen did end up meeting his soon-to-be wife, Adrienne Baum, in 1987, and he ended up marrying her that same year, as well as having two daughters together. Their marriage lasted a whole 6 years before his behaviors would become too much for her. Adrienne, in 1993, filed for a divorce and a restraining order due to the fear of her and her daughters being at risk. She describes Cullen as abusive to the family dogs, intimidating to his daughters by doing things like burning their books in front of them, and neglectful, as he even once left the children with a babysitter for a whole week. Cullen, of course, claims that this was all dramatic and overreactions, but judging by what he does during his time as a nurse, I wouldn't say her claims are too far-fetched. So now that we've got Charles Cullen's life before his crimes out of the way, we now have to delve into his life as a murderer. And please strap in, folks, because like we mentioned earlier, Cullen, in his 16 years of practice, would end up killing dozens of people across 8 different hospitals in New Jersey and PA.
Cullen started his career after being discharged from the Navy. He graduated nursing school at Mountainside Hospital in Montclair, New Jersey in 1986, and immediately got hired on the burn unit of St. Barnabas Medical Center in Livingston, New Jersey. This is where his reign of terror began. On June 11, 1988, Cullen snuck into a patient's room undetected and injected him with an unknown medication, causing the patient to overdose and die. This wouldn't be his only victim at St. Barnabas, though. Later, after Cullen's arrest, he would admit that he killed the most people at this hospital, all through contaminated IVs. He even recalled when he caused the death of an AIDS patient being treated at the hospital by giving them an overdose of insulin. In January 1992, with dozens of people dying left to right through suspicious overdoses and contaminated IV bags, St. Barnabas launched an investigation against Cullen, but before anything could be proven, he fled. During the trial, however, this investigation would be confirmed by his confessions.
Despite the close call investigation, Cullen continued. He went to Phillipsburg, New Jersey to work at Warren Hospital, where he would go on to murder 3 elderly women. He starts to find a rhythm or a signature means to an end at Warren, as each woman was murdered through an IV overdose of a heart medication called digoxin. I think the reason this didn't raise suspicions is because they were all elderly and most likely already had heart problems to begin with, so he was able to do it unnoticed and realized that this medication was the most efficient. While working at Warren, however, Cullen would become interested in one of his coworkers. He started stalking her and even went so far as to break into her house where her and her 5-year-old child lived to watch her while she slept. Of course, because this coworker was smart and a mom who wanted to protect her child, she immediately filed a police report against Cullen for his behavior. He surprisingly pled guilty and got 1 year of probation.
I wonder if he was planning on doing anything else.
I mean, most likely, yeah. But like 1 year, that's...
And it's only probation, too. It's not like...
Like not jail time. Hmm. It's terrible. And I guess Cullen thought so, too, because the day after his arrest, he would attempt suicide once again, but he was unsuccessful. For the following 2 months, he took a temporary leave at Warren and spent time being treated for depression. Even with this treatment, however, Cullen would still attempt twice more before the year would end.
Do you think maybe he'd inject himself with the same medication?
You know, I thought about that while researching.
Like, if he really wanted to, like, kill himself, especially trying 5 times, like, I feel like...
Like, what is he... Maybe
it's just for attention, because he literally could just kill himself the same way he murdered everybody else.
I know. It's really strange, because he's going to go on to do this a couple more times, too. Unsuccessful every single time.
Unsuccessful.
Yeah.
Oh, it could just be to keep up, like, the whole mental illness act.
Oh, maybe. Smart.
There's no way that you fail.
That many times? I know. That September, at Warren Hospital, after Cullen had returned to work, a 91-year-old cancer patient had told her son and made a report with the hospital that a man had come into her room late at night. He had been dressed in nurse's scrubs but was definitely not one of her regular nurses and had injected her with something in her arm. The following day, the woman passed away. After her son brought up the report and demanded an investigation to his mother's mysterious death, the hospital did in fact investigate. In fact, they even brought in a polygraph to test Cullen and a couple other coworkers, but he passed because, you know, polygraph.
Which is why they don't hold up in court anymore, because as long as you're calm, you can pass it.
Yeah, it literally doesn't hold any evidence anymore. And they didn't know that yet, so they took Cullen's passing test as innocence and dropped the investigation under the guise of a sick woman's delirium. Cullen continued work at Warren Hospital until the spring of the following year.
In the spring, he transferred to the intensive care unit, or the ICU, at Hunterdon Medical Center in Flemington, New Jersey, where he would remain for 3 years. Now, Cullen claimed he didn't murder anyone for the first 2 years of working there. This would be a really long cooling off period for a serial killer, but due to the hospital records from those years being destroyed before his trial, there was no evidence to go against him, and they just had to take him for his word. In his third year, however, he admitted to killing 5 more patients between January and September of 1996, with his newfound method of overdosing them with digoxin. He moved on to work at Morristown Medical Hospital, but he was quickly fired due to poor work performance. So thankfully, Cullen didn't get a chance to hurt anyone there. After being fired, Cullen stayed unemployed for 6 months before he was admitted to another psych ward for further treatment of his depression. When he got out, he would finally make his way into Pennsylvania hospitals.
In February of 1998, Cullen was hired at the Liberty Nursing and Rehab Center in Allentown, PA, where he was put in charge of a ward full of patients dependent on respirators. He would immediately cause suspicion around himself as he was seen bringing syringes of unknown medicine to patients at unscheduled times. One instance, he went into a patient's room, and although we are unsure of exactly what went down, we can assume, and the patient fought back as he survived but ended up with a broken arm. Cullen caused one more death there, but at the time, the patient's assigned nurse was blamed for it, so he was fired just for giving medication at unscheduled times. No investigation was launched. He just got a slap on the wrist. That's it. So he moved on. He was then hired at Easton Hospital from November 1998 to March of 1999. In December of 1998, he would kill just a single patient with his usual method of digoxin. This time, however, suspicions were high. After an autopsy, the coroner's report revealed the excess amount of digoxin and an internal investigation was held, but it was short-lived as all the evidence gathered was considered inconclusive. Like, you've got to be kidding me. Why does this guy keep getting hired? How is no one caught on?
Funny that you mentioned that. The reason for Cullen's ability to keep getting jobs is simple. There was a huge national nursing shortage, and they needed all the people they could get. Mm. Not to mention, a lot of hospitals were too worried about the liability lawsuits, so even if they did have their concerns, they weren't about to admit having any involvement. It would destroy their hospitals.
Which is just crazy to think about. Like, I get reputation is everything, but once this case reached the light of the public, they still got screwed. So
I feel like maybe also record keeping.
Yeah.
Since a lot of these were inconclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So like they wouldn't be under his name.
So after another close call, where did Cullen go after that?
Well, in March 1999, after he left Easton Hospital, he started working at another burn unit in Lehigh Valley Hospital in Cedar Crest, where he admitted to overdosing a single patient there. He did attempt a second, but it didn't work, and assuming to avoid another investigation, he resigned and started working in the cardiac center at St. Luke's in Bethlehem, where he worked for 3 more years.
This was probably the easiest place for him since his method of choice was the heart medication.
Probably. He did end up killing 5 more patients and attempted to kill 2 more, but those didn't work either. And whether he was worried he truly was going to get caught from his unsuccessful attempts or if his depression was worsening, on January 11th, 2000, Cullen attempted to kill himself once again by sticking a lit grill in his bathroom to try to die from carbon monoxide poisoning. This might have worked too if his neighbors hadn't smelt the smoke and alerted authorities. The police took him to the hospital to be checked out, but he was sent home the following day. No psych ward this time. This meant Cullen continued to work at St. Luke's. That was until a coworker found stolen medication vials in a disposable bin. After another investigation was held, this time Cullen was proven guilty, but only for theft. St. Luke's then gave him a choice. He could get fired and have this on his permanent record, or he could willingly resign and the hospital would give him a neutral recommendation. He chose the resignation and was escorted out of the building in June of 2002. After he left, several of his St. Luke's coworkers tried to alert the DA about their suspicions of Cullen, but since the investigation wasn't very thorough, in order to keep their hands clean, the hospitals weren't willing to offer any information. The case was dropped after 9 months due to lack of evidence.
After this, in September of 2002, Cullen started working at his final hospital at the critical care unit of Somerset, New Jersey. He proceeded to kill at least 13 more patients by mid-2003 with his usual digoxin, but he also started using insulin and epinephrine. On June 18, 2003, he attempted to kill another patient by the name of Philip Greger, but he was discharged before Cullen could get the chance. But by October of that year, he killed 5 more people and attempted to kill 2 others. His final patient died of low blood sugar, and this would be his last. Now, Somerset had started to become suspicious of Cullen for multiple reasons during this time, the most important being that he accessed rooms and records to patients he wasn't assigned to, requested medications frequently, almost all of which none of his patients had been prescribed, and almost all of those had been canceled and not filled. And here's the real kicker. In July of 2003, New Jersey Poison Information and Education Center told Somerset officials about 4 very odd overdoses and suggested that it was very possible one of the employees was causing these deaths.
Now, on top of all of this, the hospital was also under fire for a non-reported death of one of Cullen's patients in August of 2003. With all of these things starting to add up, Somerset fired Cullen on October 31st, 2003, and police started their final investigation.
Now, you guys know how this works. Police can't arrest anyone. They need probable cause. And since hospitals weren't talking, they had to make Cullen somehow.
Luckily for them, one of Cullen's coworkers would help them. Amy Lowrin was positive of Cullen's guilt and alerted the police immediately and offered her assistance. So between weeks of police investigating, police started having Amy go undercover. She'd spend alone time with Cullen after work hours, coaxing things out of him, all while she was wearing a wire. And after multiple sessions of fake flirting and the evidence the police had managed to get, they had everything they needed and an arrest could be made. On December 12th, 2003, Charles Cullen was arrested while sitting down enjoying a meal at a local restaurant for 1 count of murder and another count of attempted murder. And on the night of December 14th, after 2 days of constant interrogation and sitting in a cold cell, Cullen agreed to a plea deal. He'd cooperate under one condition, no death penalty.
Which, for someone who attempted suicide so many times, I find it surprising that he was willing to work with them, like, just in order to avoid death.
Maybe they were all fake.
Maybe.
Because, like, a grill in your bathroom.
I know. See, carbon monoxide was really popular back then, but it was lock yourself in the garage. Or maybe he just didn't want to get a taste of his own medicine since lethal injection was his method of choice. Maybe he's like, oh, God, I don't want, you know, what happened, what I did to other people to happen to me. Then I have to feel that.
True. But I think the one that they give just kind of put you to sleep and then you die. I feel like the other ones are kind of
like you have a painful heart attack, yeah.
But we'll never know.
I know.
So that day, he admitted to homicide detectives Dan Baldwin and Tim Braun that he did in fact murder Florian Gao and attempted to murder Jin Kyang Han, the 2 Somerset patients they had arrested him for. But that wouldn't be all Cullen admitted to. They needed his full cooperation after all. He proceeded to tell the detectives of all his murders, at least over 40 during his time as a nurse. In April 2004, he pled guilty in New Jersey court to killing 13 people and attempting 2 others through his lethal injections and overdoses while he was employed at Somerset. And the convictions and confessions just kept going.
A month after the first confession, he pleaded guilty to 3 more patients in New Jersey, and in November of 2004, he appeared in Allentown court as well, to plead guilty for killing 6 more patients and trying to kill 3 others in Pennsylvania. He had to be restrained frequently during his trial for frequent interruptions and complaints. On March 2nd, 2006, Charles Cullen was sentenced to 11 consecutive life sentences in the state of New Jersey, and on March 10th, Pennsylvania sentenced him with an additional 6. That's 17 consecutive life sentences, and he isn't eligible for parole until June 2403. Cullen, as part of his plea agreement, even after his conviction, did continue to cooperate with police in identifying the rest of his victims. So why'd he do it? What was his motive? Well, Cullen has 2 reasons for his so-called saving, both due to wanting to help his victims in the long run. The first being that he didn't want to see people go into cardiac or respiratory arrest and could not deal with the thought of what they'd go through in the attempts to save their life if they coded. And the second, sort of on the same side of things, is that he didn't want to see them suffering, so he'd put them out of their misery as an act of kindness, or so he claims. But many coworkers reject that statement, as some of the patients who perished in Cullen's care were on the mend and well on their way to being discharged. These thoughts from a mentally ill man were just savior God complex delusions. What's strange is that Cullen claims that in 1993 he almost quit nursing completely, but since he had to pay child support, he chose to continue working. Why didn't he just get a normal desk job? We may never know. But what we do know is he made the conscious and active choice to murder and continued doing so.
Now, we mentioned earlier why he kept getting away with it. But what happened to the hospitals once he was caught? Many of them were sued by the victims' families. All of these settlements are sealed, but we can assume that at least some of them got the justice they sought. And these hospitals were publicly ridiculed as well, not to mention that due to Cullen's case, PA, New Jersey, and 35 other states have since adopted many laws in order to not only provide full, honest reviews of past employees, but to offer legal protections for medical errors. These include the 2004 Patient Safety Act, which increased a hospital's requirement for reporting preventable accidents and events. In addition to this, an Enhancement Act was made in 2005 that made hospitals be mandated to report details of their employees to their New Jersey Division of Consumer Affairs, like complaints and disciplinary records, and they are now required to keep all these records for at least 7 years.
Although these victims' families will never truly recover from this kind of incident happening to someone you love, they can hopefully have some peace of mind knowing that these laws have been put in place to hopefully never have it happen to someone else.
So what do you guys think about the plea deal Cullen took? Why do you think he chose to live instead of taking the death penalty? Let us know on our social medias. They're always linked down below in the podcast description, and keep an eye out because if you're lucky, you might just be our next social media follower of the week. But we hope you like this week's episode. And Brittany,
yeah,
and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, I'll see you guys in a little bit after a small hiatus. All right. See you guys. Bye, Kasha.
Goodbye. Maybe I'll guest star.
Oh, shit. One day. Bye.
Goodbye.